Our second case is 2021-1004, the estate of Jennings Fleener versus the County of Ottawa. For the appellant, Ms. Grigsby.
Thank you and good morning, Madam Chief Justice and members of the court. May it please the court, could I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal? The only issue which this court has agreed to address is whether Ohio counties are sui juris and whether they can be sued except through an action brought against the Board of Commissioners. This court established even before the Civil War in Hunter versus Commissioners of Mercer County that a county can neither sue nor be sued except by express power conferred by statute and in the manner so expressed. The Ohio General Assembly has established that Ohio counties can only be sued if they adopt a charter form of government, which Ottawa County has not done. That's the plain language of RC 301.22. Because Ottawa County is not a charter county, therefore it is not sui juris and it cannot be sued. The General Assembly, though, has further expressed that the Board of Commissioners of a non-charter county, like Ottawa County, can be sued. That's the plain language of 305.12. But in this case, the plaintiff failed to name or serve the Board of Commissioners of Ottawa County.
Counselor, if we agree with you in position, should we reverse the 10th District Court of Appeals and remand for consideration of a Civil Rule 15 motion?
No, Your Honor. The reason is because this court has not agreed to review an issue related to interpretation of the rules of civil procedure.
Do we need to?
No, you do not. Because this court, the proper action for this court to take is to reverse the Court of Appeals to reinstate summary judgment on behalf of Ottawa County, albeit on different grounds. And at that point, there is no live case for which a Rule 15 motion can be considered. This case cannot be refiled because the statute of limitations has expired. There would be no live case that would enable the court to consider a Rule 15 motion. To salvage this case, the 6th District and now our opponents have taken the position that by adopting the Political Subdivision Tort Liability Act in 1985, the General Assembly somehow granted litigants the power to sue Ohio's non-charter counties, thus permitting litigants to bypass the need to commence an action against the Board of Commissioners. But this court's role in interpreting 2744 is to give effect to the legislature's intention when adopting it. And when the General Assembly adopted Chapter 2744 in 1985, it was reacting to and responding to a series of judicial decisions which abrogated and eroded common law sovereign immunity. It was, in effect, a form of tort reform. And that is why 2744.02a, the very first non-definitional provision of the Act, says, subject to exceptions, that a political subdivision is not liable for damages arising from the performance of a governmental or proprietary function. So from the very start, Chapter 2744, the legislature expressed its desire and its intention to reduce liability judgments by creating a presumption of immunity. And of course, the broader public policy purpose was to conserve fiscal resources of taxpayers. So given that purpose, the General Assembly clearly did not intend, when adopting 2744, to advise litigants that there is now a new class of defendants who may be sued, namely non-charter counties. Its purpose was not to facilitate the filing of more claims by telling litigants that you may now sue non-charter counties when heretofore you could not. Its objective was not to inform litigants that to access the coffers of a non-charter county, you need only file a lawsuit naming anybody from the county dog catcher all the way up to the county nursing home. The only time the word county appears in the entire Chapter 2744 is in the definitional section 0.01. And that inclusion exists for an obvious reason. It recognizes that there are some counties, namely charter counties, that indeed may be sued as political subdivisions, and those counties need to have the ability to access the immunity defenses within Chapter 2744. Boards of County Commissioners in non-charter counties are bodies, corporate and politic, responsible for governmental activities in a geographic area smaller than the state, and so they fall within that definitional provision. Our opponent's argument requires the court to imply from the inclusion of the words in the definitional scheme that the General Assembly intended to establish the right of litigants to sue counties and to set forth the means of doing so. But this court has never said that power and authority can be granted by implication. Should the court dig deeper into 2744, it will come to 2744.02b5, which states that civil liability for purposes of the B5 exception shall not be construed to exist, among other reasons, because of a general authorization in that section that a political subdivision may sue and be sued. So what does that language tell us? It tells us that the General Assembly recognized that there are general statutes elsewhere in the revised code that state whether and how political subdivisions may be sued, and that the provisions of 2744 are distinct from them. The Court of Appeals relied primarily on a case called Rankin versus Cuyahoga County Department of Jobs and Family Services. But I would want to point out that the Rankin case arose out of Cuyahoga County, which is a charter county. In that case, the appellate court simply recognized that since charter counties can be sued, so can their agencies. But this case presents the exact opposite situation. Since non-chartered counties cannot be sued, neither can their agencies. Our opponent spends a little time responding to these points. Instead, he seeks to equate Riverview Nursing Home with the Board of County Commissioners. But Riverview Nursing Home is not the Board of County Commissioners. Riverview Nursing Home is located in Oak Harbor. The Board of Commissioners is located in Port Clinton. The complaint was not served on the Commissioner's office in Port Clinton. It was served on Riverview in Oak Harbor. This case was never commenced against the Board of Commissioners.
Well, counsel, what would have happened if the commissioners were each named, sued, and served?
Well, the case would have unfolded through discovery in a manner that may or may not have been the same as occurred in this case. We cannot speculate exactly how it would have occurred. But what we do know is that Riverview did not hide this sui juris defense as a matter of gamesmanship. It did not suddenly pull it out of the hat at summary judgment. The defense was raised in the answer to the original complaint. Plaintiff's counsel then inquired about it when submitting a request for admission, which the defendants refused to admit. The case was dismissed and refiled, and when it was refiled, despite that information, it was not refiled against the Board of Commissioners. Again, the issue was raised in our answer as an affirmative defense. The prior discovery was imported into the newly filed case, and so it was reasserted there. And it did not come up again until the summary judgment proceedings, and then it came up for the fifth time. And that's what makes this case so different than the two that this court has previously decided, the Smith versus Brushmore newspaper case and the Bumpke versus Northern Ohio tractor case, which plaintiff has cited to support a concern about active defense of the case. In both of those cases, the plaintiff sued the alleged corporate wrongdoer under the wrong corporate name. In both of those cases, if you read them, the court was concerned about deception. That is, that the defending party misled the plaintiff by not pleading the defense that the improper party had been named until after the statute of limitations had expired. But that's not this situation here. The defense put the plaintiff on notice that the party it sued was not sui juris at the earliest possible moment and repeatedly reasserted it. So there was no deception here. Riverview never wore the mask of the Board of County Commissioners. It did everything in the name of Riverview. and it gave ample notice of this concern in time to permit the complaint to be asserted against the correct party before the running of the statute of limitations. Now, there's been some suggestion that the court should somehow resolve this case in a way that would so-called resolve it on its merits rather than apply the straightforward language of the statute. But again, I point out that this court has agreed to hear this case to decide if Ottawa County is sui juris and subject to a liability judgment if its Board of Commissioners has not been sued. It did not agree to hear this case in order to interpret the rules of civil procedure. But moreover, there are really three situations in which this preference, if you will, for resolution of disputes on the merits comes up, and this case does not fit into any of those three situations. That principle comes up frequently when a claim fails because of noncompliance with certain prescribed technical rules, but it does not apply when the failure ultimately affects whether the court has personal jurisdiction over the defendant. And that's the lesson of the Patterson case, which is cited in both briefs, and which this court decided in 1992.
So what is your position on dismissal because of no amendment of the complaint within the statute of limitations?
This case must be dismissed because it was brought against a non-sui juris party, that the inevitable impact of that decision will be that it is too late to bring an action against the Board of Commissioners.
But the case is still pending.
The case should not be pending because jurisdiction was never obtained over a party subject to jurisdiction. So this case is a nullity, and it must be dismissed and recognized as such.
Well, why would we decide that issue? Why wouldn't we just reverse and send it back to the trial court?
Well, because the trial court would have no option at that point other than to dismiss. In order to be consistent with this court's ruling, let's assume the ruling is that the county is not sui juris, then to be consistent with that ruling, this court must recognize that the party named cannot be sued. It must dismiss the case.
Well, but why not make that argument to the trial court? Why should we decide that?
Well, it is a matter of judicial economy. There is no other remedy that can exist, and so this court can make that ruling. If this court chooses to remand it to the trial court, then the court must make that ruling as well. It's the inevitable byproduct of the determination that Ottawa County is not sui juris. I would also point out that this notion that should the case be resolved on its merits is sort of a misnomer. It is not uncommon for there to be application of a rule that results in a determination on procedural grounds. But plaintiff will not lack a remedy if a mistake in litigation is made.
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time. I just want you to know.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me just say that I think the appropriate and most straightforward outcome in this case is to find that Ottawa County is not sui juris to dismiss the case.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices of the Court, Will Eady on behalf of Plaintiff Appellee. The court accepted on the limited issue of whether counties are sui juris and can be sued or whether they have to be sued through the Board of Commissioners. And I want to suggest that whatever the court's decision on that kind of bright line rule, in this case should be remanded and go to trial before a jury for several reasons. First of all, and we would adopt the Amicus Ohio Association of Justice briefing on the matter, suggesting that the statute at issue 301.22 doesn't in fact bar suing counties that aren't chartered. It just provides that once a county is chartered, it can be sued. The question here for us is when we have a misnamed entity, so presuming for a moment that the court decides we should have named the Board of Commissioners individually and served them individually, which I'll suggest shortly we did, not name them, identify them correctly, but did serve them. Do we allow a party to correct that misnomer? And this court's already decided that. Patterson was very clear on that front. There, a party had misidentified The opposing party was aware of that. Multiple times it was brought to their attention. It was suggested to them, I believe, not only by opposing counsel, but by the trial court, that they amend to name the party correctly. They failed to do so through trial. And this court decided in Patterson, or described in Patterson, how under rules, Civil Rule 3A and Civil Rule 15A, the party could have moved to amend at any time after the First Amendment complaint and before resting his case. So this court decided in Patterson, assuming a trial court allows you to do it under Rule 15 and you've misidentified a party, you can rename them all the way any time prior to judgment.
So why didn't you move to amend?
We did. And we moved to amend in our briefing in opposition to summary judgment, Justice. We spent 5 pages of the brief arguing why we should be permitted and explicitly asked the court for that leave. Now, opposing counsel's argument is, well, you didn't file a separate motion. Justices, look to the docket. Restrict your view to the docket. But our briefing, including the request to amend, is part of the record.
You put it, I'm confused. Did you file a motion to amend, or did you just put it in your summary judgment motion?
I would argue we did. We did not file a separate standalone document for which there is a docket entry, which I think is what you're driving at here, if I'm understanding you correctly. We did not do that. We did, however, in response to the argument that this county was not sui juris, ask the court explicitly, and if you look at the civil rules, there's nothing that requires a motion to be made as a separate docketed document. In fact, you can make oral motions to the trial court, and it's explicitly in the civil rules that motion practice can be oral as well as written. So we did spend 5 pages of our brief explicitly asking and arguing for, to the trial court, the right for leave to amend, which, as this court's well aware, should be freely granted when justice so requires. And to Chief Justice O'Connor's question about what would the difference be had we named them correctly, there would be no difference. It's not speculative. There's no question. This case has proceeded through discovery, depositions, expert reports, summary judgment. It is teed up and ready for trial, just as it would have been if we had individually named the commissioners. And to the question of service, which I do think is an important one, because the stronger part, I would suggest, of their argument is that, well, you have to get service within a certain period of time. However, service includes to the head of an agency, department, institution when it comes to counties. In this case, Riverview is an institution. It's been around a long time. It's county run, and it is run by an administrator. In Ohio, nursing homes, whether county run or not, have a legally created, statutorily created role called administrator, who is the head person legally responsible for the operations of the facility.
Brings the county then into the lawsuit and liability?
I think it brings the Board of Commissioners. And the reason is Ms. German, who is the administrator at the time at issue and who testified in this case and whose testimony is part of the record in this case, testified. She was appointed by the Board of Commissioners. She reports to the Board of Commissioners. There is no separate nursing home entity. There is no legal entity called Riverview, which the county just happens to own or something. It is the county. It is the Board of Commissioners. The Board of Commissioners is in charge of the nursing home. They appoint the lead legal person responsible for operations at the nursing home. They control the budget for the nursing home. Every element of operating and managing that nursing home is controlled by the Board of Directors. And importantly, under the rules for service—
Wait a minute, it's controlled by the Board of Directors, you said?
By the Board of Commissioners, thank you, I misspoke. And importantly, for service is appropriate if it is upon an agent or an officer of an institution. So in the civil rules, and you heard from opposing counsel, well, the Board of Commissioners' office is at this address and the nursing home is at this address.
So you're saying that the administrator of the nursing home is equivalent to serving the three commissioners?
I would suggest that it is the equivalent when it comes to ensuring, for purposes of amending, to name the commissioners, that the commissioners were served and were aware of the lawsuit. I have no doubt that, under different circumstances where we didn't serve the head person at an institution, this may not apply. So there may be other circumstances where you should name the Board of Commissioners and you serve some other group that wouldn't fit under the service rules. But here, Kendra German at the address for the nursing home is an appropriate place to serve the Board of Commissioners.
Let's go back to the proposition of law at hand, okay? What is your argument that Ottawa County is sui juris?
Well, first of all, revised code section 301.22 doesn't bar suing counties. You would think it does based on the arguments you've heard, but it doesn't. It never comes out in
our sense. Case law say.
Well, there's no question that in this case, could we go back in time, we would name the Board of Commissioners. I would still suggest that it would be an appropriate decision of this court to say, if you, whether you're incorporated or not, or chartered or not, you can be sued through the Board of Commissioners or sued directly through the county. I think both the Sixth District opinion referring to Plate v. Johnson, the Judge Carr's decision in the Northern District of Ohio, pointing out that it doesn't define 301.22, doesn't define the capacity to be sued. So whether we named them appropriately, I think the point is nothing in that statute says you can't sue Riverview Nursing Home because they're part of Ottawa County. And if they don't adopt a charter, tough luck. No one in that facility has rights that they can enforce. Now, even when if this court remands, as I suggest they should, and either direct the trial court to permit amendment, because I think the law is clear in a case like this that should be appropriate, or if you want to reserve that for the trial court, we should have the opportunity to amend to name them correctly. And importantly, there would be no prejudice. And when I say no prejudice, I mean no prejudice. They, being the Board of Commissioners, has proceeded to defend and litigate this case. You've heard, and you see in the briefing, a description of, well, Riverview defended the case, not the Board of Commissioners. Riverview had their employees testify, not the Board of Commissioners. Riverview had access to medical records of a resident that they would only be entitled to look at if they were a party to a lawsuit brought by that resident, or it would be a HIPAA violation, not the Board of Commissioners. There is no Riverview. There is no Riverview. There is only the Board of County Commissioners who have chosen, for whatever reason, to engage in a proprietary function that the private world also provides. They've chosen to operate this nursing home, and they've chosen to do it in a way that happened to lead to the injury and death of the plaintiff's decedent in this case. But the bottom line is, once they make that choice, they don't get to show up and participate in litigation and take all the actions they've taken in this case and then say, well, you named us wrong, we would be prejudiced if you now changed the name listing on the caption of the complaint. That would be the ultimate form over substance, given that they have, in fact, no prejudice because they participated in the case. I'd like to suggest, too, that regardless of the bright line rule the court may decide to make or not about sui juris for unchartered counties. In this case, the specifics of the facility, including the fact that the county, or the Board of Commissioners, I'm sorry, chose to name themselves the same way we name them in this case when suing a resident to collect a bill at Riverview. So while the Board of Commissioners holds themselves out as being able to sue and be sued as County of Ottawa, the Board of Commissioners participated in the litigation in this case. The Board of Commissioners have been part of every step of this case, including retaining counsel, that the court should, regardless of the bright line rule, find that in this case, there's no question that it should proceed to a trial.
The example you gave about suing a resident, you included that in the record, correct?
Yes. Uh-huh. And we included the complaint. We included, and I don't think there's a debate. I don't think they've suggested that they didn't use that name. They're just suggesting that, well, we messed up the same way you did, but it's unrelated to this. I would suggest we didn't mess up, but if that's not the opinion of this court, in any event, Rule 15 is very clear. Whenever justice so requires, leave should be granted to amend. There can be no clearer case of justice requiring that, because the alternative is, this family never gets a day in court. This family never sees a jury. Now, that doesn't mean, and you heard a lot about immunity law, that doesn't mean that they are not given protections from the immunity law. The Sixth District opinion still found that we were subject to a recklessness standard. And while we might disagree with that, that is what's going to happen on remand. On remand, we're going to have to prove recklessness. We're still going to be subject to political subdivision immunity, but we'll be able to proceed to a jury trial as opposed to it just being a nullity we can't continue. And importantly, with regard to leave to amend, there is nothing that requires that to be done within the statute of limitations. You see in the reply briefing in this case, a lot of talk about the length of time that has elapsed. But this court in Patterson made quite clear in circumstances in which the counsel in that case literally refused to amend the complaint when the court suggested they do it, still would have had the right to amend it. Not because it was within the statute of limitations, it was at trial, it was certainly well beyond the statute of limitations, but because there hadn't been a verdict rendered at that point. Just as, and I think pointed out quite appropriately, that under 15B, even if we were in trial and this issue was raised, we could say to the trial court, here's the same evidence we provided in the record, that they have been participating in this litigation from day one. There will be no prejudice. Please allow us to amend this to comport with the evidence at trial. And even then, under the Patterson decision, this court would say, we could do that. So the trial court never reached the issue, never decided on leave to amend, because the trial court decided we didn't have a case under immunity at all, and we didn't have evidence. The appellate court remanded, and I believe we'll have leave to amend, but did find that recklessness standard did apply. So the only question here, or I guess I should say, and I think to Justice Stewart's question, initial question, yes, you should remand with the instruction whether leave to amend, when you look at the facts in this case and the broad scope of Rule 15, I think that would be appropriate. But in any event, remanding it so the case can proceed because of the county's conduct in this case, their involvement in the case, and the fact that this is really just a question of misnaming them. It's not that we're trying to sue somebody that can't be sued. It's that we put the wrong name on the line, arguably, is their argument. We put the wrong name on the line, and we want to correct that. Won't change anything about the complexion of the case one bit. They'll still be entitled to immunity as a political subdivision, and the case will proceed apace with no difference. And to Justice DeWine's question about why not let the trial court decide, I think that's exactly right. If this court is going to make a ruling one way or another on what entity you can sue for chartered or unchartered counties, great. Shouldn't change the complexion of this case ultimately, which is that it should continue to a jury, or we really will be elevating form over substance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you saved about 2 minutes.
Thank you. Let me address the prejudice issue for a moment.
Let me ask you a question first. Why did you stay in it?
We felt that we had preserved the defense multiple times, and in order to present all of our arguments in a single motion, we decided to include the sui juris defense within our briefing on summary judgment. We believe that we have the discretion to be able to manage the litigation in a way we think it is appropriate, and that was our choice.
Well, your goal was to have the case dismissed.
Yes, and we raised on any of multiple levels. And one level was application of immunity substantively. One level was the sui juris lack of naming an appropriate party. And we decided to present both of those arguments in a single brief.
In the summary judgment?
Yes, ma'am. Let me talk a little bit about...
All right, let me... I get the impression from opposing counsel that everything... in fact, he said it. Everything's ready to go to trial.
Well, that's not accurate. There is still some discovery that needs to be done. We briefed the matter before full expert discovery was completed. And so there is work that would need to be done if this case were to proceed in the trial court. But I stress that that is not possible because this case was commenced against a non-sui juris entity. The case is a nullity. If plaintiff were to attempt to refile it, the statute is expired.
Let me ask you about the pass-through theory, which is what I'm going to call it, that the administrator gets served and somehow that is service on the three commissioners.
That's not correct. I mean,
that's what he said.
I disagree with that. Service on a non-chartered county has to occur upon the Board of Commissioners. That's the clear implication of the statutes that we have, the statutes in Chapter 3, or Title 3, I should say. And so we cannot change that just because an error was made in this case. Those statutes have to be given their plain, direct meaning. And I would suggest that there is prejudice in this case. There will be prejudice if this court refuses to strike plaintiff's complaint, which was filed against a non-sui juris entity, because prejudice exists whenever litigants do not have the assurance that the rule of law will be followed. And that will be the result if the decision of the appellate court is left to stand. And prejudice exists when the rules of law are not applied to govern all parties equally, and a special exception from operation of the rules is created to relieve a party from the consequences of mistakes made during the course of litigation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you call a recess?
All rise.